Welcome to the Lemper Report Live. Now, I hate to say I told you so, but when last October we reported on the Pappy Chip Challenge, we warned how dangerous it was. Now, guess what happened? Last week I got an important message regarding your order from Amazon. Dear Amazon customer, we have learned of a potentially safety issue regarding certain products that our records indicate you purchased through the Amazon website. For more details on what you should do, please contact Pappy. And now on their website, they have the One Chip Challenge is intended for adults only, with clear and prominent labeling highlighting the chip is not for children or anyone sensitive to spicy food, or has food allergies, is pregnant, or has underlying health conditions. If you remember, at that point in time, a lot of schools were banning the product. We've seen an increase in teens and other individuals not heeding these warnings. As a result, while the product continues to adhere to food safety standards, out of an abundance of caution, we are actively working with our retailers to remove the product from shelves. We are also offering refunds on our single-serve one-chip challenge product. Seriously, do we need this stuff? I don't think so. On today's broadcast, Giant Food, bold move to deter theft, doesn't have CPG brands very happy. Generation Z continues to change the food world. Is Tyson's autonomous food trucks the solution or a problem? The World Resources Institute playbook to urge people to eat plant-rich diets. Can being vegan reduce your food costs? On Food Not Phones, it's how to live to be 100 years old. And on The Bullseye, it's all about Kraft Heinz trying to bribe kids to read more by giving them snacks, unhealthy ones at that. Please check out foodnotphones.com and join us for National Food Not Phones Day coming up real soon on September 19th. We also had an anniversary to share. Sally Smithwick celebrates 21 years today on the Supermarket Guru team. Sally, thank you. Let's get started. So Giant Food has decided, because of the theft problem that they've got in their Washington, D.C. store, to remove many national brand health and beauty care products from its shelves. They're replacing them with private label items at an effort to deter theft. So what's confusing to me, Sally, is that, yes, store brands are slightly cheaper than name brands. What they're removing is Tide, laundry detergent, Schick razor blades, Dove soap, Degree deodorant, and Pantene shampoo. But I'm not sure that this solves the problem of theft. They're also hiring guards to check your cash register receipt as you leave the store. What do you think about all this?
Well, we have been hearing a lot, and we've reported on it here, about theft and how this is continuing to be a problem, particularly with self-checkout being the main way that people are paying for their groceries in the supermarket. So it isn't surprising to hear this. What is confusing to me as well is, yes, how does replacing with a private label a product that is really not that much cheaper and probably as desirable, how does that solve the problem? Or is this just an opportunity to eliminate the competition by putting your private label there, is one thing that I wonder. But it is something that we all need to be paying attention to, I believe, in the food industry, that people are stealing more, and they are stealing more because they can't afford these items. And there's, you know, Phil, I was looking at I don't know if you ever look at Reddit, but I was looking at Reddit, which is a popular site where people talk about all kinds of things. And I actually searched this topic, people shoplifting. And there are so many threads on there of people confessing that they are stealing items at the grocery store, and they are stealing these items, even though they feel bad and they feel like it is wrong. They are doing it because they just can't make their paycheck stretch enough to get what they need to get for their family.
So maybe what we really need to do, if these CPG companies are going to be serious about staying in business, maybe don't give, you know, their CEOs $100 million bonuses and, you know, don't have the record profits that they've been having since the pandemic. You know, maybe the way around this is lower your prices.
Yes, and I also think people are a little frustrated with self-checkout, that it has now become their job to check out and bag their own groceries. And so, you know, that right there is presenting not only an avenue for people to steal, but also just something that the customer is frustrated and feeling a little cheated about already. Your prices are high, but you want me to do the work. You want me to check out the groceries and you want me to bag them. So these are things to consider.
Yeah. And in certain stores, whether it be ice cream or some of these products, they're now behind plexiglass. So you've got to go find somebody to unlock it. Then they bring it to the cash register for you. And it's just a downward spiral that we've got to get out of. So there's a new report that just came out that found that Generation Z is leading the plant-based movement. 70% of the age group of Generation Z responded they would continue to pursue a vegan diet within the next 5 years. They consider themselves tech-savvy, socially conscious, entrepreneurial in spirit, and primarily vegan. And 50% of vegans polled chose the lifestyle because of its health benefits, which is really interesting. But the other thing that's leading for them is how environmentally friendly or more environmentally friendly a plant-based diet can be. They're getting more fiber, more antioxidants, richer in potassium, magnesium, folate, vitamins A, C, and E. So the question is, are we going to really start to see veganism get even more popular?
I believe we are, Phil. And, you know, it is interesting to see that Mark Stephanie, the VP of Food Service and Sales for Just Egg, who is quoted in this article, says that in the last year, the number of college and university campuses bringing our products into dining halls has grown 45% to include 115 schools. Now, that's just, you know, one company. But we think about all of the universities, and not just the universities, but the public school systems. We think about what New York City has been doing within their public school system in offering vegetarian and vegan options now to these younger generations. And so they are being exposed to these foods a little bit more. And so they are more willing to accept them as part of their diets. Whereas I think of growing up when I was a kid, if someone had put tofu in front of me, you know, I would have never tried it.
Absolutely.
Yes, it is. It is an interesting, very fast movement lately that we are seeing of people into the vegan and the vegetarian world. And I do believe that this climate conscious society that we are, that is happening right now, is a big part of the reason.
And also, the other side of Generation Z, according to another survey by FlavorStream, found that Generation Z is ending relationships with others over arguments about dining choices. The survey was called Diner Habits Study Finds America's Relationship Turmoil. There were 1,500 Americans that were surveyed. 68% of people have ended a relationship over arguing where to eat. Seriously? You know, maybe you didn't want to be in that relationship to begin with. If, you know, just arguing over food is going to get you to stop that relationship, it just seems kind of weird to me.
Yes, I wonder what those arguments about. I think about my children, and they can't really end their relationship with each other. They are brother and sister for life, whether they like it or not. They will definitely argue if we are going out to eat or what we are choosing to order in. You know, they will have an argument about what we are having. But maybe this has something to do with the the way that people are eating differently and how much weighs on it for them. You know, for those that we just talked about that are moving into vegan diets and vegetarian diets, you know, it's health reasons, but it's also being climate conscious. It's also because of cruelty to animals, or it's about saving money. And those are all very weighty issues on young people right now. So maybe that's what's making these arguments mean so much more than you think they would.
And probably what you need to do is, before you get into a relationship, find out what foods the people like, and that'll determine whether or not, you know, you're going to have a good relationship. So another very strange story this week. Tyson has a pilot program to autonomously ship Tyson Foods products between Dallas and San Antonio, Texas. The reason for it is the shortage of truck drivers. And they go on and on and on talking about how these autonomous trucks can be a huge benefit. I disagree with this. What do you think?
I've been on the fence about this, Phil. It seems like this could be very useful, particularly in situations where we don't have the drivers and we need to get things across the country and get food to people. It's slightly frightening to me from a safety standpoint. And so it's concerning. But you know what? I looked up some statistics on this. And I found out that autonomous vehicle accidents record a slightly lower rate of accidents compared to conventional cars. So right now, they're showing that they are a little bit safer and that most of those accidents happen from human error. I also read that by 2025, that we are expecting 8 million autonomous or semi-autonomous vehicles to be on our roads. So if that's true, it's coming, and it's something for us to start learning to accept and get used to, I suppose.
So part of it for me, where it all falls apart, is when you can have a truck that can drive itself, but somebody still has to load that truck with the Tyson products. Somebody still at the supermarket level or at the wholesaler level has to unload the truck. So typically, that's, you know, the truck driver that, you know, when I see them here delivering to restaurants, I mean, it's the guy in the truck who then opens up the back, takes the stuff out, brings it into the restaurant. So I'm not sure how they're going to automate that, or are they just going to have to hire more people to do that, because we already have this major shortage of people working in supermarkets. Now, if the truck driver can't deliver the product, the supermarket's going to have to hire more people that they can't hire now.
Yes, we'll have to see how this plays out. And I'm not sure how the truckers union as well is going to feel about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a new playbook, back to talking about plant-rich diets. There's a new playbook out that talks about how in food service, restaurants have to get people to eat more plant-based. And they've got what they call the 5 P's, product interventions that focus on modifying the dish or product itself, placement interventions that involve changing food displays, presentation interventions that outline ways to redesign food menus, promotion interventions that focus on how to price and market plant-rich meals more effectively, and people interventions that engage staff members to influence diners' choices. So when we talk about Generation Z being plant-forward, when we talk about now this playbook coming out that's teaching or trying to teach restaurants how to sell plant-based, I really agree with you that I think veganism and vegetarianism is going to get a lot more attention than it's ever gotten before.
Yes, and these are really great strategies that the World Resource Institute has put together in this playbook. If you are in the food industry, if you are a food service provider, if you are a retailer, if you have a restaurant, if you are a chef, get this playbook and take a look at some of the suggestions and strategies in here on how to encourage more plant-rich diets, which we all know that we need, whether we continue to eat meat or not. We all know that only 10% of Americans are eating enough fruits and vegetables. And so we need those. And some of these strategies are very simple, like reduce the amount of meat in a dish while increasing the amount of plants. And you can do that, you know, in very small proportions, gradually. So the strategies are not completely renovating your restaurant and turning it into a vegan restaurant from a meat eating restaurant. These are just ways to sort of bring those plants together with the foods that you're already serving and let them all coexist front and center.
Exactly. And some other good news. Again, it seems like today all we're talking about is plant-based and vegan.
Yeah.
There's a new study that found that a vegan diet lowers food costs by 16% for overweight adults. So one of the issues that's always discussed is how a plant-based diet is more expensive. But this clinical trial in the Journal of American Medical Association found that it can actually lower food expenses. They did a sample size of 200 overweight adults between the ages of 30 and 55 over a six-month period. And basically, going vegan, that doesn't sound like a lot of money, but that's not the point. You could save about $1.51 per day compared to the control group that ate the way they normally did. Now, I know that $1.51 doesn't sound like a lot, but the reality is that it really disputes that whole argument that says that being plant-based is more expensive than not.
Exactly. And I'm not exactly sure how we came to believe that being on a vegan diet or a vegetarian diet was more expensive, except I wonder if it's because we used to have there were certain types of stores that were specialty, that were vegetarian stores or health food stores, and they are more expensive, those specialty stores. And so maybe that's where the idea comes from, that people associate those types of stores and having to shop there if they're going to eat vegan. But your regular supermarket is full of produce and full of beans. We're going to talk about Dan Buettner in a moment, and we'll talk about the importance of beans. But he talks about how beans are about $2 a pound. So that's a very inexpensive way to get a very healthy food in your diet daily, is what he recommends. And also, it's not more expensive to eat this way, but you are making huge improvements in your body mass index and lowering your cholesterol and preventing diabetes.
And also, researchers from the Massachusetts General Brigham Healthcare System found that providing plant-based foods could be a useful strategy to prevent childhood obesity in kids from food insecure families and then set them up for better health when they become adults. And it's really important because right now, 41.9% of Americans are obese. 41%. So we really need to do something if we're going to change this. So on Food Not Phones today, we've all heard about the blue zones that Sally just referred to, those areas where people live to 100 years old or more. Today, we're going to explore how most people hope that they'll live a long, healthy, and happy life, but few are able to travel the world in an attempt to reverse engineer the formula for longevity. That's exactly what Dan Buettner did. Beginning in the early 1980s, he collaborated with National Geographic and scoured the globe in pursuit of places where people live much longer than average, and created the concept of blue zones. And there's an impact on cell phone usage as well. Sally, as you said, you're a fan of Blue Zones. What do we need to know?
Well, Phil, I just watched this Netflix series, How to Live to 100, Wherever You Are in the World, that Dan has just released. And it is absolutely fantastic. I highly recommend anyone watching it. It's very inspirational. He goes to these communities throughout the episodes that he has studied, where the longest living adults can be found and the highest concentration of centenarians. And throughout the series, he walks us through four key components. They are eating wisely, primarily a plant-based diet, moving naturally, like gardening and walking, having a positive outlook, which also kind of includes having purpose in life. And for some, it means having a faith-centered life. But here's the last one. And this is one that really stood out for me, and it really stood out for Dan, too. He said many times throughout the series, it's not just the diet. It's really more the human connections that you make with people. And I love what the story he is telling within these communities. One of my favorites, Phil, was in Okinawa, where we have many of these older people living. They have a tradition of forming moais. And moais are socially committed groups that get together on a regular basis. They sing and dance they sing and dance together. They play games. They have conversation. But the other thing they do is that they pool their money together so that if anybody runs into any hardship for any reason, then this little social circle gives the money that they pull together to help them. And to me, that is such a shining example of community and also helping people to not become lonely, to not become isolated, which in this series, Dan Buettner talks about the epidemic of loneliness that we have here in America, and he talks about it as basically taking years and years off of your life. In fact, 15 years, taking 15 years off of your life. So we obviously can take some inspiration from these communities that it is important for us to connect with our families and our friends. And what we are trying to do here through our initiative, Food Not Phones, is we're trying to encourage people when they gather around for meal times, just at that time of the day, to put your phone down and to have face-to-face interaction and see what sort of impact that has on how you feel all day and probably a significant impact on your physical health as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're all in this together. And that's the most important thing. And when I say all in this, it's life. And the more that you can join with others, more you can celebrate with others, the best. And, you know, don't forget, Food Not Phones' first day is September 19th. Join with us, along with industry leaders, the FMI Foundation's Family Meals Movement, Acosta Group, Hy-Vee, Fresh Direct, That's It, Shuttlecock, and the Association of Retail and Consumer Professionals. For more information, go to foodnotphones.com. Thanks, Sally. On Lost in a Supermarket, I sat down with the CEO of the Chamber of Progress about the monumental FTC lawsuit against Amazon and what it could mean for every grocer in America. For the complete episode, just go to supermarketguru.com, click on Lost in the Supermarket, and you can hear the whole episode. But here's just a little bit about what he had to say. If we take a look at Amazon, Amazon sells a lot of grocery products, both on Amazon.com and obviously with Whole Foods. You know, I just have to wonder if it is so linked to Amazon Prime that the effect that Walmart Plus will have, IV Plus, I mean, all these grocery retailers have basically copied Amazon Prime and put in their own products, if you would, that offer delivery, that have other services bundled with their $99 or $129 package for all these grocers as well. So if the FTC is able to do this with Amazon, is the next step for FTC to go to Walmart and everybody else that has these kinds of programs and try to do the same thing there? I don't think that's your agenda, but I think you're raising a really interesting point, which is that Amazon's competitors and kind of this mega retailer space, if you think of it as a market, but I think it's probably Amazon's competitors are broader than that, they're all doing something similar. Walmart, Target, Costco, they all have their version of Amazon Prime. You sign up for Walmart Plus, you know, you get access to things. Yes, you get all the Walmart benefits, but then you get access to Paramount Plus, a streaming service, which is sort of roughly analogous to having access to Amazon Prime Video. And so I think these bundles are competing with each other. They're understandably trying to vie for customer loyalty and make their bundles, you know, more attractive than other bundles. The fact that they are competing with each other, frankly, undercuts the FTC's case that there's something about the Amazon Prime bundle that's anti-competitive. If it was anti-competitive, you wouldn't see Walmart and Target competing with Prime.
On today's Bullseye, Kraft Heinz, in my opinion, has crossed the line. They say that they want to help kids read while eating snacks. According to Mashed, the company has created fundamental textbooks. And the best part is that they're free. That's the good news. The company has books with snacks tucked away on the inside. That's the bad news. For instance, their Jiggleometry book, a play on geometry, teaches kids about shapes and non-shapes. Tucked inside of the book is a container of Jell-O. Cute. The book Nibbleonomy is about astronomy, helping kids learn about the universe. Inside this book is a cup of Kraft macaroni and cheese. Not sure what that has to do with the universe. There's a book called Stackonomics about economics and has a Lunchable inside of it. Slurp Story, a funny book about history, has a slurpable Capri Sun inside. Kraft Heinz is donating $10 to the nonprofit organization First Book. Every fundamental textbook that's ordered, and again, keep in mind they're free, $10 goes to the nonprofit. Kraft Heinz is also donating $50,000 to the organization. Yes, I think that Kraft Heinz is doing a service for our kids. But seriously, can't they do it with healthier, better-for-you foods? There's no reason with their vast portfolio that they couldn't choose foods that are less processed and that kids would still like. Seriously? Jell-O? Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here next week, same time, same place, and have a great week.
Be sure to visit supermarketguru.com for the latest marketing analysis, issues, and trends. And don't forget to join us back here next Monday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern for more.